Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration, collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with filmmaker Kate McKenzie and writer, producer, and marathon man. Can I say that? Martin Parnell, he's here. And Kate is here today on Face to Face to talk about their new film, The Secret Marathon. It's also a book. It's also a website, thesecretmarathon.com. Check it out. There's a virtual screening coming up in the next few days, actually. So look for that online. Buy your tickets. It's a fundraiser. This is what a great time we had. What a great conversation we had. It was also a real challenge to me, just on a lot of levels, physical level, but also on a metaphorical level, from a leadership perspective as well. I mean, and just living life. Are you getting a sense for the film here? Of course, it's a film about running, but it's about so much more than that. It's about sharing our stories, and it really is a film and a story about hope and resilience. And as Martin will tell you, he ran a few years ago 250 marathons in 1 year. Can you imagine 250 in 1 year? You know, that might be a lifetime for many, and I'm probably not going to even get 25 in a lifetime. I've never run a marathon in my life, but apparently the way to work up to that is 4 minutes of walking and 1 minute of running. We talk about inspiring moments and how we're all looking to be recognized in this idea of being free. And the democracy of running. How interesting is that? This is about women. This is about gender equality. This is about equity. It's about diversity. It's about similarity through difference and persistence and patience. And it's a really wonderful, challenging, delightful film to watch. It's about hope. So I really do hope you step in and not only listen to the interview, but And you'll see we all have a great time. But there is a virtual screening coming up for a couple of days at the end of January 2021 with a few special guests, I think, online for a Q&A as well. And of course, you can learn more about it at thesecretmarathon.com. So check it out. Don't forget, davidpecklive.com is now the best place to find out pretty much everything about me. It's consulting and where Face to Face is going to be living, a whole new redesigned website. So I hope you enjoy that. It's really simple and I hope crisp. And it's probably going to have a few hiccups over the next little while. That's only if you found this interview through iTunes or Spotify or one of the usual suspects. And we'd really appreciate you signing up for the newsletter. But also, even more importantly, give us a thumbs up on YouTube. Subscribe on YouTube, subscribe on iTunes or Acast, and please leave us a review if you enjoy what we're doing here. If you've enjoyed this interview, it's a challenge to get that kind of social media attention, but we'd appreciate it. And then share it with family and friends. Tweet about us. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Instagram. We have a very small Instagram following on Face to Face, but I have a decent Twitter following. So stay tuned. Don't go away. Coming right up, Kate McKenzie and Martin Parnell talking about their new film, their important new film, The Secret Marathon. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by two very special guests here with us today. Sadly, once again, we're still not face to face thanks to this thing called COVID. One of these days, we're going to get beyond this and we will be back in the same room. But digitally, it's making sense right now to create communities online. And how crazy is that? But we've got Martin Parnell and Kate McKenzie here with us today to talk about their new film, The Secret Marathon. Thank you to you both for joining us here today on Face to Face.
Great to be here.
Yeah, our pleasure.
So, you know, let's just, you know, step right in as we usually do on Face to Face. I'm not going to talk too much out of the gate. I have the gift of the gab, I guess my mother might say. But Kate, why don't you tell us a little bit about the project, sort of higher level, how you guys met. Martin, so many questions for you as well. But why don't you give us some context for our listeners, and then we'll get right into it. I've got so many questions. Oh, and by the way, before we even go any further, congratulations on the film, on finishing the marathon. And Martin, congratulations to you on so many levels, I suppose, for all the marathons you've finished over the years. Yeah, no, seriously, it's a huge accomplishment. Love the film, so important. But again, congrats.
Thanks.
So Kate, tell us, give us a bit of context.
Yeah, absolutely. So The Secret Marathon is a film about the first woman to run a marathon in Afghanistan. And, you know, this has been a project that both myself and Martin have been involved with since 2016. So it's really been a little bit of a marathon to bring it all the way to this point. You know, I never could have imagined how big this project was going to get. And, you know, having worked on it since 2016, worked on this film, you know, we're so excited now that we have the chance for everyone that's been a part of it, everyone that's supported it, everyone that's touched this film in some way, shape, or form, to be able to finally see it at our global gala at the end of January. I mean, this is such an incredible opportunity because, you know, up until this point, you know, we've been showing it at festivals and that sort of thing. And this is the first time that anyone anywhere in the world can finally see this film.
What's the response been like so far?
You know what? It's been incredible. So we started screening the films at festivals in September of 2019. And, you know, at each festival that we've gone to, we've had sold out crowds. So we've sold out the theaters. And in fact, you know, in Calgary, we sold out the theater and they said, well, let's open up another theater. We sold out that one as well. And, you know, we were honored to be able to be chosen for Audience Choice Awards at multiple festivals as well. You know, receiving that at the Edmonton Film Festival in our home province of Alberta was pretty incredible, but also at Cinefest out in Ontario. You know, it's just been amazing to see that people are really connecting with this story. And I think that's because it's a story of hope and it's a story of resilience. And I think, you know, in this year of a pandemic, I think a lot of us can relate to that need for hope and that need for resilience in the face of challenge. And so this isn't just, you know, that story that's only feel good. It's also, it shares a story of people that are overcoming huge amounts of difficulties in order to achieve really incredible things.
It's so great. Martin, tell me about how you and Kate met maybe and why did you choose running?
Well, actually running chose me.
Okay.
I had no interest in running.
Well, okay. So Martin, you and I share that.
So at the age of 47, I had a phone call from my brother, Peter, who challenged me to a marathon. I didn't run, but of course you don't turn down a challenge from a younger brother.
That's right.
I just said yes, and then had to say, oh my gosh, what have I done? And I started running 1K and 2K, and then I joined a running club. So running was not part of my life, as I say, until the age of 47.
Wow.
But then I started to find that I enjoyed it from a physical, you know, doing something physical, mental. I began to, I think, get the benefits from it. And even though my brother didn't continue after the marathon, I continued, and it just led from marathons to triathlons to ultra running. And so over the years, I've, you know, done a lot of marathons, done a lot of fundraising for children's charities, including Right to Play. And I did run 250 marathons in 2010 and raised over $300,000 for the charity. So I was,
hang on, 250, that comes out in the film. That's 200, just to be clear for the listeners, that's 250 marathons in 1 year, right?
Yeah, five a week for a year.
That's a lot of running.
It was a long year, okay. And
so Martin, have you sought any kind of professional help for this?
My wife Sue.
This pursuit, yeah.
Yeah, she kind of keeps an eye, but she hasn't cured me, right. So I'm still going. But what happened is, it was sort of incredible. That in 2015, I suffered a massive clot on the brain. Mm. Nothing related to the marathons, David, I got to tell you.
Right. Okay.
But yep. I had a massive clot on the brain and it changed my world around from doing all this running and stuff to suddenly needing help to get to the washroom, you know, just 20 feet away. It was just, I just lost so much control. And over the next few months, I was slowly learning to walk and just get a little bit back, you know, back to normal. But in October 2015, my wife Sue showed me an article from The Guardian, and it was about the very first marathon of Afghanistan and the story of Zainab, her story of training and the challenges she faced. And I said to Sue, if I get better, if I can run again, I want to go to Afghanistan in 2016 and support the women and girls. And then just a few months later, I bumped into Kate, and maybe she could tell her story. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I was a little bit of a fangirl, I have to admit, David. So I'd read Martin's book,
Running of
These, you know, all of these marathons. And I thought he was a pretty inspiring person. And I saw him at an event. And you know how you want to meet the people that inspire you, right? And so felt a bit nervous though, right? Because I wasn't sure, you know, how's he going to respond? You know, sometimes it's the worst idea in the world to meet your heroes. But I walked across the room to him, and I'm so glad that I took those couple of steps of courage, because we started chatting. Martin told me he was looking for a filmmaker, and I said, oh, well, I just happen to be one. And
happen to have my business card here with me.
We started chatting more and more, and he told me about this story of Zainab, and it just stuck with me because what he shared was about this young woman who just wanted to go for a run, and for her to go for a run outside. You know, she couldn't do what I do every day, which is just, you know, lace up my shoes and go outside. You know, for her, she was having people throwing rocks at her. They were calling her a prostitute. She was even receiving threats from terrorist organizations to her phone just for going for a run. And, you know, Martin was telling me about this, and then he said, you know, like, for me, I'm sorry, but if someone was throwing rocks at me, that would probably mean I would choose a different sport. I probably wouldn't keep running, right? But for Zainab, she actually started training in an enclosed courtyard, you know, just outside of her house where no one could see her. And so she was running loops in a space about the size of the average Canadian's backyard, you know, so imagine like 42.2 kilometers worth of loops. And like, that image of this young woman just, you know, having the resilience to keep going, training over and over and over in these loops, just so that she could have the opportunity to participate in the Marathon of Afghanistan, you know, it stuck with me. And Martin said, well, you know, I'm planning to go over, and I, you know, I'm hoping to like capture some of this on my phone or on my GoPro. And do you think you could maybe like edit it together a bit for me? And I was just like, oh my gosh, Martin, this is way too important of a story. This is amazing what's happening. And for me, you know, as a filmmaker, as a storyteller, I feel like my role is to help share these kinds of stories, to help spread these ideas where you see people that are doing really great things to change their community. And so I thought, well, you know, I said to Martin, what if I just came with you? What if I helped you capture this instead of trying to patch something together from your phone? And that's kind of where this whole adventure began.
It really is a crazy adventure. I mean, I've been crazy good adventure. You know, I've been interviewing filmmakers for years, and the commitment and the passion and the intention of being able to stick with it. I mean, the metaphors just abound, you know, and the resilience of both of you to see this through as well, I think needs to be, you know, noted and applauded as well, because it's so much work. And I want to ask Martin a quick question, Kate, but I'd love to come back to, I think I read somewhere that you know, not only did the story have to shift significantly because of security issues and so on, but you know, you just couldn't fundraise the way you might normally fundraise for a film. You couldn't produce the film. You couldn't promote it while you were in production because of some of those security issues. I'd love to hear more about that. Martin, you talked about, I think, baby steps when you were kind of recovering and getting back into, maybe that's my language, baby steps, but step by step, I think, was the line. And there's a great scene in the film where I think you're talking to a young woman and saying, oh, you know, maybe you don't want to do the marathon quite yet. But how about you do the 10K? I don't know how long a marathon is. Sorry, I'm a bit ignorant there. And I go for long walks, Martin. Is that okay?
Well, David, let's talk about this, okay? So first of all, you know, a marathon is 42.2 kilometers. You know,
okay, good.
Yeah, so there you go. So there's your target.
And, thank you.
Absolutely. So, you know, for any starter runner, I do have my training programs, David, if you'd like a copy. But, you know, there's a 5K, a 10K, then there's the half marathon, and then the full marathon. And so, you know, I always talk to people about, you know, let's start small. Let's start.
Yes.
Let's start walking whether you want to get off the couch or whatever. Start with walking and then do a bit of a run. So do 4-in-1s, 4-minute walking, 1-minute run. And so, yeah, that's what I was saying to Cooper, one of the young women who wanted to run this marathon. She hadn't trained. And again, I wouldn't recommend, you know, you try and run a marathon without training. But the reason she didn't train is a friend of hers had been killed in a terrorist bomb at her school. And so that was a very difficult conversation.
And I think where I was going with it, I think, was a comment that James made later in the film about shifting perceptions, right? So you got to, I walk every day. There's no way I could ever run a marathon, right? Well, it's a 4-minute walk. It's a 1-minute run. To your point, it's a shift. It's a slow change. It's the pebble in the pond. And either of you, I'm sure, could answer this and speak for a long time about it. But, how does that change happen? You know, Afghanistan has typically been seen as a place you would never want to go as a tourist, I suppose. And yet you hear James talking about that, about rebuilding and shifting people's perceptions. I think that's a wonderful thing. And that, Kate, isn't that, Kate, what you kind of got into filmmaking for?
Absolutely. I mean, for me, the power of storytelling is to shift perceptions and to change how we see the world, right? I think, you know, you can only change so many people's perspectives through a debate, but if you can inspire their imagination, if you can, you know, help to show a different perspective, I think that often does a lot more to move us in a positive direction. And, you know, for me, the filmmaking and the storytelling I do, I intentionally seek out places where we haven't always heard a positive story. And I think, you know, you're exactly right. Oftentimes, Afghanistan is known as being a place of war, terror, poverty, right? And certainly there is some truth to that. I mean, you mentioned the challenges of even doing this film. We were asked to keep all of the, you know, the film itself a secret. And so we started referring to it as the secret marathon. That's where the title for the film came, was that, you know, the race directors asked us not to share, you know, when the race was happening or to share any details about the film, because they were concerned that if it was found out that there was a film being shot at the marathon, that could increase the chances of it being a target. And so, of course, we respected that. But, you know, as a filmmaker, that's a huge challenge, because normally you share that story like with everyone, right? It's not like documentary films generally are, you know, making a whole bunch of money. So we rely on people, you know, providing funding. We rely on getting the word out as soon as possible about these kinds of projects in order to be able to get the funding needed to do it. And in this case, we couldn't do that. We had to keep it a secret. And, you know, I think that was a huge challenge. But that said, you know, I think this desire to show a different perspective, to show that Afghanistan truly is a beautiful place, and the people that are there are some of the most generous people I've met anywhere in the world. You know, I really believe that idea really captured people's hearts and really captured their desire to be involved with us and to make a difference. And so, you know, we had individuals from all across Canada and all around the world that actually, you know, gave donations to help make this film be possible. And we received the initial seed money that we needed even to go over to Afghanistan from a Canadian company, Viz, who provided us with that seed money and said, we believe in what you're doing. We want to see it happen. And we're going to help you get over to Afghanistan to tell the story in the first place. And so I think there's something really powerful about choosing to tell a different kind of story and right. not being afraid to share something that's maybe not the normal perspective that we've always heard.
Well, it's so great too, I think, for filmmakers that are out there, for listening, for storytellers, for writers. I'd love to hear about what you've been writing over the last little while, Martin. I think you've published at least 3 books, maybe more, but it's just, it's a real affirmation and an encouragement, it seems to me, to stick to it. I remember talking to a videographer several years ago and looking at a project, a documentary project, and just saying, yeah, I just don't have that kind of commitment. I just don't think I could, you know, I just don't think I could stay with something that long and see it through. So I love that metaphor of not only this film, but of the marathon itself. And Martin, you're a TED Talk guy. You're a motivator, clearly. Can you talk a little bit about that marathon like metaphor that clearly you've been living your life by for many, many years now?
Yeah, it's a journey, and it's part of, you know, how I live. Is the running is a metaphor for so many things. I mean, even now with COVID, you know, this isn't a marathon; it's an ultra marathon. This is a tough goal, and it's not over, obviously, and it's going to be a while, even with the vaccine coming. But it is part of the marathon idea of sticking at it. It's, you know, this isn't a sprint; it's not a 100-meter race and suddenly it's finished. You need elements of stickability, of persistence, of patience, you know, that you need to work on. One thing I believe in is also breaking things down. Don't get it totally overawed where it's just too big. If I, you know, just thinking about going to Afghanistan, if I knew now what I know, you know, knew then, gosh, you know, even getting over there, I mean, getting the visas and everything, it was a tough go, David. And, and this idea of breaking it down, when I run a marathon, I don't think of the 42.2 kilometers or the 5 hours. I think in 10-minute blocks. And I simply think of running 9 minutes and walking one. And that's it. And then I'll do another 10 minutes. And I think that's kind of part of it. And I think it's worth sharing, whether it's, you know, making films, whatever walk of life you're in, a huge part of it is sticking to it, is just having to grind through a lot of it and keep going. And that's definitely something I've used, as you mentioned, through the 3 books, is a theme. You know, stick to it, but also I think learn to share and learn to give back through it. And that's one thing running for me has done, is at first it was just for me. It was a challenge, and then it was trying to beat certain times, but it's moved on to giving back and, you know, sharing with people, see how we can make a difference.
I love Martin, how you talked again at one point. You know, I love this idea of 10-minute blocks. By the way, that sounds like a title of a book. You know, what is that? The 4-hour work week. You know, I know that's a totally different kind of a thing, but it's all about how to manage one's time and also the hurdles. Right. The you know, if I mean, you could look at any kind of road movie like The Myth of Sisyphus, I suppose. You know, you're rolling the boulder up the hill, and a marathon is like, I've never run one, but it's got to be a lot like that. You know, that desire to want to quit has got to be fairly persistent, I would think, until you've crossed a certain line. So I love that. But I'm just wondering, how did your perception of all of this shift? Like, what have you learned after? I'm not going to ask you how old you are. You can tell us if you want, but you've been running for quite a while and you've run quite a few marathons. You've learned a ton over the years. What do you take away from the most recent viewing of the Secret Marathon?
Well, you know, full transparency, David, I'm 65. Okay. Let's not beat around the bush here. Okay. If I'm 65. But having said that, gosh, over the years, I think what I've taken away is what I've gained from pushing through a number of things, whether it's a challenge through running or a physical challenge through the blood clot. But working at that and being positive, you know, being curious and being open to talk to anyone who wants to have a conversation about what's going on. This is a, like, there's no real answers. There's just, okay, what can we do together? And I think that's a huge part of where I go. I had no interest in going to Afghanistan. There was, you know, it wasn't something that crossed my mind. I've traveled a fair bit through running and different things. But when I read about Zainab and what she had to deal with, it triggered something in me that then there was a reason for me to go to Afghanistan. And that's, I think, something I'm always looking for. What's the trigger? What can I see and what can we see that will make us interested to do something, and particularly helping others? Again, such a difficult time right now. And we've just got to reach out to each other, have a conversation, and how can we help? And that's kind of the road I'm on.
I think if I could just add in there too, David, like, I think sometimes people see where we're at now with the marathon and it looks like this beautiful finished package, right? And you think, oh, wow, like, you know, and I think, you know, we live in this social media culture where we often only share things when they look pretty and they're all done and they're beautiful, right? And I think, you know, Martin for sure has this incredible internal drive with all of the things that he's done. But what he's just was sharing about the power of coming alongside, I think one of the most beautiful messages of this film is that, you know, I don't think any of us accomplishes these things or sticks to it on our own. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, the fact was, is that Martin, you know, knew that there was a role as a runner to go and run alongside these women. And so it's not about necessarily giving a hand up or, you know, treating people as though they're a charity case or anything like that. It's about saying, you know, each of us can do something. We can run alongside others and we can help out. And, you know, I think, you know, sometimes that's all we need. We just need someone to run alongside us, right? And I think Martin exemplifies that so well. He certainly, he helped train me how to run. He's been a mentor for me. But I think, you know, it's one of the big things I've taken out of this film as well, is that the number of times that someone just sent us a little encouraging note on social media, or someone, you know, reached out by email and, you know, whichever, and just said, hey, I love what you're doing, keep on going. That's running alongside in its own way, right? And so I think that sometimes we underestimate the ability we have to come together and to help one another. And, you know, we've seen, you know, one of the coolest things that's come out of this whole secret marathon film is that, you know, it ended up, you know, inspiring a run and a walk where people are doing exactly that through the Secret 3K. They're actually coming together and running and walking together for equality. And so I think, you know, and I'd love to share more about that, but I think there's this overarching idea that we're not trying to do this alone. No one's going to succeed if we try to do it by ourselves. We have to come and run alongside one another.
Well, it's a beautiful message of about relationship and about the power of others. We know ourselves in relation to others, the power of community, you know, what can happen. I love the title card, I guess you call it, when, you know, 2015, one woman was running in the race, and then just showing that it takes time. This is about commitment. This is about passion. And I think it connects really well to Martin's comment about 10-minute blocks. We all can step into this. Right. That's I think that's my takeaway from that sort of 10-minute block thing. Martin, don't you say at one point as well that you run with something or someone in particular, often in mind, almost as if it's a relational challenge to you? Does that come out in the film?
Well, there's elements of that in the film, but also just with what I'm doing, I'm very close to my granddaughter, Autumn. Mm-hmm. And over the years, she's 16 now, but over the years we've run together, and I ran with her when she was younger on one of the marathons, 250 marathons, when she was, I think, 4 or 5. And then over the years she's been running, and then we've run with each other, and we, you know, she tries to beat me, but she hasn't beaten me yet. But I think that's going to happen.
It's going to happen too.
I think it's going to happen pretty soon. But I think that's you know, and you're exactly right. This is personal. I mean, I think it's a big story. It's a wonderful story, but of, you know, Afghanistan and of the women and girls. But it also is very personal to me from a family point of view. And being a mentor, as I say, I'm 65. I'm a grandfather. I've got, you know, two grandboys and Autumn, my granddaughter. And that's really the heart of it. I mean, I want to tell them stories. And you mentioned the three books, David. Those books, quite frankly, are for my grandkids. If I sell any others, that's great. But that's who they're for, so they can read stories and ask questions. And for me, quite frankly, that's enough. I mean, that's just fantastic.
Kate, how many times did you want to just go, okay, yeah, this isn't going to work. I'm out. Martin, the call, you had the phone in your hand. Yeah, Martin, I'm done. This is going to, we've got an 8-minute film here, tops. That's all we got,
So many times, David.
I bet.
Full transparency. Yeah, there have been so many challenges with this film. I mean, as Martin said, just getting over there was challenging. Yep. Filming over there was challenging. We really wanted to work with the Afghan community. And so it's important to be respectful of, cultural norms and all of those sorts of things, so that was a challenge, just picking a crew that was willing to go over to Afghanistan, and to put themselves at risk, and also had the abilities to be culturally respectful, right, was a challenge. But I think some of the big challenges as well came, in the story itself. So, we set out to go over there, and we had hoped that we would have the chance to interview and to meet in person Zainab, who is the first woman to run the marathon in Afghanistan. And, as often happens in Afghanistan, sometimes it's not safe for people to travel. Sometimes it's not good timing for someone to come and participate in something. And so she wasn't able to participate the year that we were over there. So, as a filmmaker, you go over thinking, you've done all this research, you've found this perfect person who's going to be able to help share the story. And then we lost our main character, right? And then we started interviewing other women, and we found some other women that were also incredibly amazing. But unfortunately, as we started working on the film, one of them also let us know that she, due to her work supporting gender equality in Afghanistan, she was receiving increased threats for herself and her family. And so she said she needed to be removed from the film because she was concerned that it might continue to further that issue. And so we, of course, said, of course, we'll take you out of the film, right? But as you can imagine, by that point, we had this beautiful story, and it just left holes in the film everywhere. Yeah. And so, but as often happens, I think when you're faced with a challenge, it gave us an opportunity to come up with a creative response, which was that, we used that opportunity to create an animated portion of the film. And so we took all of these women who had told us stories, but for security reasons, weren't able to share their story on film. And we put it together into this one, sort of every woman character that's an animated character, so that we could still share those stories, that we could still honor the stories that had been shared with us, but do it in a way that was safe for those women. And so I'm so proud of what was achieved. And, both Scott Townend, my co-director, and Kendall Lazan, our animator, did an incredible job of weaving together that story and helping to share it in a way that would allow us to help share what is the reality for so many Afghan women.
Martin, there's so many places we can go with this. Thanks for that, Kate. Martin, you talked about at one point in the film, reacting, I think, to the young woman who'd lost a friend to, I think it was a landmine. I'm not sure. It might have been some other explosive device, but let's go with landmine. And you said, this is the world we live in, and it just shouldn't happen. How do we get to that world? And I mean, it's a crazy idealistic question, but it's been the core of the work that I've done for almost 20 years working in international development. You see these injustices, the gaps, and we could have a couple hour conversation just about that alone. But I'm wondering, how do you keep the hope up? I mean, this is a story of hope and resilience and fighting back and finishing, crossing the finish line. I mean, it's just so beautiful, all of those lines and those metaphors. But yeah, it's a big question, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, it's such a difficult question, David. And in fact, particularly in the film, there was a section where Kate and I spent some time in a cave, in a cave with a family. It was a mother and five children, and one of the youngest children, 7-year-old, had been affected by one of the IEDs, the independent explosive device, and she has brain damage. And I left that cave. The little girl couldn't leave the cave because she was too frightened to go out into the sunlight.
Right.
And I was totally devastated. And in fact, you know, I think about that every time I see the film. I think about it. I honestly feel almost, you know, guilty that I left that cave.
Right. Right.
Didn't, yeah. And it was. It's. And honestly, it's just an awful feeling that this family, they've been in there 12 years and I'm walking away. The only thing I can offer in kind of recompense is I try and do some other stuff. You know, I try as best as I can with a, you know, 65-year-old man who tries to make a little bit of a difference to other children and other people. On that same day, I mean, that day was incredible visiting those caves. Just half an hour after seeing the family, Kate and I went into a school where there were 20 school children, elementary school kids, and a young teacher. And it was amazing what she was doing. And then after that visit, Kate and I went and played soccer with a group of boys
right.
just down yeah. there. And all I can say
universal language, right?
Well, exactly. And it's all about the little things. You know, we talk about the big changes and we talk about, you know, global stuff. But it all boils down to what we do as individuals, okay, on small elements. And whether it's playing soccer with kids or, you know, trying to help a runner, I think one of the keys is that all a lot of people are looking for is to be recognized. It's for somebody to speak to them as a one-on-one, not down at them, not at them, but just have a conversation and build that relationship. And I think if we did more of that, then there would be a natural shift, quite frankly, away from some of the, you know, the garbage that we're seeing around the world. And that's a one-on-one. That isn't a company or a committee, but it's one-on-one. And that's like the film. Individuals will see this film and they will take away from it, each of them, what they see. But each of them will hopefully do something for their own and for others. And that's all I'm looking for, David.
Yeah, that's good. It's so great. Kate, would love to know how, I mean, you've talked a little bit about, and I'm sure there's lots of other stories and some that would probably bring tears to your eyes and some, I would imagine, deep-seated laughter as well. But how... What's the film really about for you now? Gender equality, we've got access issues. We've got, you know, somebody once said to me a good definition of poverty is just a lack of opportunity, right? An inability to get to a clean water source easily. And, you know, things like that. All of this comes up in the film and education and violence and peace and so on. I'd love to know, I mean, and you don't need to just wrap it up in, you know, one sentence. But I'd love to hear that, especially as you have this virtual gala coming up, and this is about raising awareness and raising funds and so on. But I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, David, you know, we interviewed so many different Afghan women, and with each of them, I asked them what inspired them to run.
Right, it's good.
And each of them, in, you know, more or less the same words, responded back saying, "I want to feel free."
Which really comes out beautifully in the film.
Yeah. And so I think that, to me, you know, it's something I think we often take for granted here in North America is our freedom to run. And for me as a woman, you know, I think there's an even another side to that, which is that, you know, the marathon is a really unique event. It winds through the heart of a city. Right. And in places where we have marathons, we're actually kind of making a bit of a democratic statement. We're saying that, you know, if you can run here, you have the right to be out in public in this space. You have the right to move your body. You have the right to be free. You have the right, you know, to do something together with others, you know, and to do something with others of the opposite gender as well. And I think that's so fundamental. And yet I think we often forget that we have that right. And, you know, it was only 50 years ago that, you know, Catherine Switzer was the first woman to run the Boston Marathon. And at that time, she was actually pushed out of the race by one of the race directors. and told that she was not allowed to compete. And so I think oftentimes, you know, we look at ourselves here in Canada and we think, oh yes, well, we're so much better. Our gender equality is so wonderful here. And yet, like, that was only, you know, my mom's generation.
Right.
A woman was told, you can't do that. In fact, you know, I had the chance to talk with Catherine Switzer, and she told me, people told her that her uterus would fall out and she'd get hair on her chest because she was running a marathon. You know, like, that's not so long ago. And so I look at what's happening in Afghanistan and I'm just like, I'm floored. I'm amazed at how quick, you know, how quick things are changing. And the fact that, as you mentioned earlier, like, the first year the Marathon of Afghanistan was held, there was one Afghan woman that participated, Zainab. The next year, the year that Martin and I participated, six Afghan women participated. And every year it's gone up to last year, there were 40 women that participated. You know, and I just think there is this amazing ripple effect. And I think that we, you know, we really need to ask ourselves, what does a gender equitable world look like? And for me, that's become even more personal. I just had a little baby girl myself. She's 4 months old.
Wow, congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah. And
Martin, you know, by the way, she's going to beat you in a marathon one day too. just to be clear.
You know, I think I want her to know that I did everything I could to help build a more gender equitable world. And I think that part of that is creating spaces where people feel safe to go outside for a run or a walk. You know, one of the things that we took away from being in Afghanistan was that, you know, you actually can use athletics, you can use sport as a way to help create gender equality. And I think sometimes we just need to know that something is possible. We need to know that, you know, you can run and be safe in a space. And if we can do that together, then it creates a symbol of what's possible in the future.
Martin, we're going to have to wrap up the conversation fairly soon, but I'd love to hear a little bit about both of your partners. So Lior, I think Kate, and there's a beautiful moment with him in the film, and Sue for you, Martin. Did she just go roll her eyes when you mentioned Afghanistan moving this whole crazy project forward, or did she just go, yep, go ahead, it's all yours? You know, like, had she known you already well enough by this point to just go, all right, well, he's going to do it either way, so off you go?
Yeah, Sue's always worried when I say, Sue, I've got an idea.
That's right. I bet she is. Yeah.
She's heard that a few times, and Sue takes a deep breath, and then we talk about it. And yes, it's a bit of a journey. When I said that I wanted to go to Afghanistan, I think, again, there was a silence. I think Sue had given me the article to inspire me, but not to have me travel to Afghanistan. Having said that, you know, Sue and I, we've been married for 15 years, and I have to give, you know, Sue credit. I started running at 47. Sue started at 52 and did her first marathon at 58. And so, you know, full credit. She's a person that sticks to it and has pushed through. And you know, we kind of deal with it together. Going to Afghanistan was very stressful. For me, I kind of have a little different view of the world. I'm not reckless, but I, you know, I do try and mitigate the risk. But as you can appreciate, that there was a lot of late night conversations about me going there. But Sue is stuck by me. Yeah, she stuck by me all the way. And I'm sure if I come up with another Sue, I have an idea. There's going to be a conversation about it.
It's a great moment. Kate, because I've been down this road and traveled a fair bit too. I think you're putting on your backpack, and I don't know if you were going out to train or you were heading out the door, let's say, maybe to the airport. Yeah, I think you had a Band-Aid on your left shoulder, and I went, oh yeah, that's probably, oh, I don't know, what is it, cholera or, you know, vaccination of some kind. Maybe not. Maybe it was just something else. But
you called it some sort of immunization.
I
got pushed for,
Yeah, no, it's great, right? Talk about mitigating risks, because I remember the first time I went overseas, really went overseas. As a kid, I was fortunate enough and had the opportunity to travel to the UK, but went to Singapore to visit Elizabeth, my wife, in 2000 and just boggled my mind. Like, what do you mean I'm in Tokyo Airport? Like, I didn't even know this part of the world existed except on a map, you know? So it's talk about shifting perceptions. And it's been one of the greatest things that's really, truly ever happened to me. Martin, I love how you say you do it together. And Kate, I got that sense with Lear. I loved it. Was such a beautiful, I guess it was a Skype call or maybe it was a pre-recorded message that he sent you. You're living the life you wanted, and I think and something about trusting yourself. Mm-hmm. You got to be a different person as a result of this experience. Can you, as we wrap up, could you talk a tiny bit about that?
Absolutely. I mean, first off, I am just beyond blessed to have a partner that is, in every sense of the word, truly a partner. You know, Lior, who has, similarly to Sue, has been, you know, involved in many a crazy project with me and supported me along the way. And, you know, I think it's often hardest on the people that are left behind, you know, in that they're the ones that are left waiting to hear if we got there safe and sound. And so I think, you know, behind every filmmaker, behind every storyteller, behind every explorer, there is a family and there are friends that, you know, are also facing huge challenges, right? And so I want to really acknowledge all of those people because I think they've played such a huge role. And I think, you know, for me, this has been so much more than just creating a film. It's been about trying to help, you know, inspire a movement for equality. And, you know, I think that we need to do this together, right? I don't think that this is something that can be achieved by just, you know, one film or through one event alone. I think it's an ongoing effort. But what I'm really proud of is all of the people that have seen the film, and even those who haven't yet seen the film, that have gotten involved and made chosen to make a difference, right? And so, you know, in 2017, I had this idea of saying, well, could we be able to, you know, host an event where we encourage people on International Women's Day to run and walk for equality, right? And use some of that to help support the Marathon of Afghanistan, to use it to support local initiatives for gender equality, you know, and it was amazing to see that, you know, that idea started to resonate with people. And in fact, you know, I chatted with this idea with John Stanton, the founder of Running Room, and he loved the idea so much that he said, let's host this event in 10 cities, you know, all the way across Canada, all on the same day. And I was like blown away. I'm like, well, John, if you'll help us out, sure, let's do it. And, you know, and we did it and people showed up, you know, people showed up all the way across Canada. This year, we're in our fourth year of the Secret 3K and people have come out to run and walk 3 kilometers with us. And, you know, now we've had people in every single province across Canada and in 23 countries around the world. And so this idea is catching on. And so I think that's where we're really truly going to see change is that people in their own communities are saying, we believe in a world where everyone is free to be able to go for a run or a walk, and that no one should have to feel afraid to do that in their own community. And I think that's where we're going to see true change. And that's what I hope keeps going. And I'm so excited for people to be able to finally see the film because
yeah, it's really exciting. It's got to be. Yeah. So many emotions, I would think. You've been to a few festivals. Tell us as we wrap up, and honestly, I wish we could, maybe we're going to have to do a part two down the road, but tell us what's next. So we've got a virtual screening coming up very soon. Secret Marathon. By the way, the website is secretmarathon. Is it .org?
.com. Secretmarathon.com. Don't forget the in front.
Yeah, thesecretmarathon.com for more information about the team and the film and about Martin's books, I think, and about and Martin, you've got your own site as well. Why don't we give a shout out for that?
Yeah, absolutely. So martinparnell.com, you know, come on over and you can share the journey.
So yeah, Kate, just as we close, what the obviously it's right out of the gate, it's kind of we've got the virtual screening over a couple day period. It's about raising funds, but like you say, it's way bigger than that.
Absolutely. So we're really excited. We've actually partnered with Demand Films and with AirMeet to create a really interactive experience for audiences, and so we're hosting this virtual gala January 29th to 31st. And there's 6 different screenings, so you can like pick whichever time works best for you. And, you know, yeah, tickets obviously are on thesecretmarathon.com. But, you know, we're so pumped because it's going to be a chance for people to come together in a virtual environment. They can, you know, network with others through this platform, meet some new people, some old friends, right? Then we're doing, we have some special guests that are joining us. We get have a full screen of the film and then a Q&A with myself and Martin afterwards. So, you know, it's all live. This isn't pre-recorded.
Yeah, people it's get so cool. Engage.
Yeah, it's going to be very neat. So doing that January 29th to 31st, and then we're also inviting people to come join us for this year's Secret 3K on March the 3rd. And so I think, you know, there's so many ways to get involved here. And I just can't wait to see everyone out at the gala. I think it'll be really awesome.
It's amazing. And after the gala is over, will people still, if they can't make it there, are they still going to be able to access the film at the site and so on online? Are you talking about other types of distribution down the road?
Absolutely. Well, if you know you or any of the listeners has a best friend at Netflix, we always like to know. But we'd love the film to be seen more widely. But we're also hosting community screenings. So for people that, you know, maybe this date doesn't work for them, but they want to host something in their own community and share this story, you know, we have ways to be able to do that. And so absolutely just reach out to us on thesecretmarathon.com and, you know, we'll get back to you because we truly want everyone to see this. One of the things that we've been doing over the years is building up a little bit of a fund so that we can actually bring this film into schools. And so Mark and I are both really passionate about this making a difference for the next generation. So we've developed a bit of a school fund. So yeah, I think so many ways in which people can be able to see this in the future.
It's so great that the story is going to live sort of beyond that festival experience and going to live online, live in schools. And if I can just riff off of Catherine's quote, but if you're losing faith, what is it? If you're losing faith in humanity, go out and watch a marathon. How about go out and watch the Secret Marathon? How about we, yeah,
a little update. It.
Yeah. Martin, you working on another book?
Yeah, there's one coming out in April.
Wow, there you go.
But you won't be surprised by the title. It's called The Ageless Athlete. Age is just a number.
There you go.
In a nutshell, yeah, I'm challenging some of my best running times from 15 years ago when I was 42. I challenged them at the age of 62, and it's a story of what happened.
Looking forward to it. I mean, it's probably not going to be your final book either, is my guess. Or your final marathon. How many are you hoping to run this year?
Well, I'm still trying to figure out my plan. I did, last year I did four, which included Boston and New York and London.
Right, okay.
Yeah, but no, I haven't really got a plan for this year. So I've got to kind of figure something out.
Well, COVID's kind of thrown everything sideways, to say the least, hasn't it? It really has. Listen to you both. Thank you so much for joining me today. What a pleasure having you on Face to Face. If anyone's out there listening, make sure you check out the site, thesecretmarathon.com. Please leave us a review on iTunes at Face to Face or like us on YouTube. And you guys, I'm sure, have a whole social media platform as well. Check the Secret Marathon website out for that as well. Martin, Kate, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a real pleasure having you both on the show.
Great. Thank you, David.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.